CD 9.
Kumi chewed his fingernails distractedly. Fire, he said. That'd stop 'em. They're very inflammable. Or water. They'd probably dissolve.
Some of them were destroying pyramids, said the high priest of Juff, the cobra-headed god of Papyrus.
People always come back from the dead in such a bad temper, said another priest.
Kumi watched the approaching army in mounting bewilderment.
Where's Dios? He said.
The old high priest was pushed to the front of the crowd.
What shall I say to them? Kumi demanded.
It would be wrong to say that Dios smiled. It wasn't an action he often felt called upon to perform, but his mouth creased at the edges and his eyes went half-hooded.
You could tell them, he said, that new times demand new men. You could tell them that it is time to make way for younger people with fresh ideas. You could tell them that they are outmoded. You could tell them all that.
They'll kill me.
Would they be that anxious for your eternal company, I wonder?
You're still high priest.
Why don't you talk to them? Said Dios. Don't forget to tell them that they are to be dragged kicking and screaming into the century of the cobra.
He handed Kumi the staff. Or whatever this century is called, he added. Kumi felt the eyes of the assembled brethren and sistren upon him. He cleared his throat, adjusted his robe, and turned to face the mummies. They were chanting something, one word, over and over again. He couldn't quite make it out, but it seemed to have worked them up into a rage. He raised the staff, and the carved wooden snakes looked unusually alive in the flat light. The gods of the disc, and here is meant that the great consensus gods, who really do exist in dumb manifesting, their semi-detached Valhalla on the world's impossibly high central mountain, where they pass the time observing the petty antics of mortal men and organizing petitions about how the influx of the ice giants has lowered property values in the celestial regions, the gods of the disc have always been fascinated by humanity's incredible ability to say exactly the wrong thing at the wrong time. They're not talking here of such easy errors as it's perfectly safe or the ones that growl a lot don't bite, but of simple little sentences which are injected into difficult situations with the same general effect as a steel bar dropped into the bearings of a 3,000 RPM 660 megawatt steam turbine. And connoisseurs of mankind's tendency to put his pedal extremity where his tongue should be are agreed that when the judge's envelopes are opened, then Hoot Kumi's fine performance in Begone from This Place Foul Shades will be a contender for all-time bloody stupid greeting. The front row of ancestors halted and were pushed forward a little by the press of those behind. King Tepikaimon the 27th, who by common consent among the other 26 Tepikaimons was spokesman, lurched on alone and picked up the trembling Kumi by his arms.
"What did you say?" he said.
Kumi's eyes rolled. His mouth opened and shut, but his voice wisely decided not to come out. Tepikaimon pushed his bandaged face close to the priest's pointed nose.
"I remember you," he growled. "I've seen you oiling around the place. A bad hat, if ever I saw one. I remember thinking that."
He glared around at the others.
"You're all priests, aren't you? Come to say sorry, have you? Where's Dios?"
The ancestors pressed forward, muttering. When you've been dead for hundreds of years, you're not inclined to feel generous to those people who assured you that you were going to have a lovely time. There was a scuffle in the middle of the crowd as King Pasam Nut Kahar, who had spent 5,000 years with nothing to look at but the inside of a lid, was restrained by younger colleagues. Tepikaimon switched his attention back to Kumi, who hadn't gone anywhere.
"Foul shades, was it?" he said.
Said Kumi.
"Put him down."
Dios gently took the staff from Kumi's unresisting fingers and said,
"I am Dios, the High Priest. Why are you here?"
It was a perfectly calm and reasonable voice, with overtones of concern but indubitable authority. It was a tone of voice the pharaohs of Djeli Baby had heard for thousands of years, a voice which had regulated the days, prescribed the rituals, cut the time into carefully turned segments, interpreted the ways of gods to men. It was the sound of authority, which stirred antique memories among the ancestors and caused them to look embarrassed and shuffle.